The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Progressive presents Adjusting to the Suburbs. You just bought a home in the suburbs, but no one told you about all the birds, specifically this one, who seems to be calling out Roy. Roy. But who exactly is Roy? And why doesn't he ever respond? Maybe Roy is just bird speak for save with Progressive by bundling your home and auto. I guess until Roy answers, we'll never know. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Coverage provided in service by affiliates and third-party insurers.
Hey guys, and welcome to Happy, Sad, Confused. This week, Fred Armisen on Portlandia, SNL, Documentary Now, and what's going to be written on his tombstone? I'm Josh Horowitz, the host of this little show. Welcome aboard. Thanks for tuning in, guys, as always. As I said, this week's guest is a true comic genius. I don't think I'm overstating it. I'm obsessed with a bunch of his work over the years. Fred Armisen, of course, you know him from his, I think it was at least 10 years at SNL. He was an amazing part of that cast. And in recent years, he's shifted his attention to some similarly amazing TV work, including Portlandia, which is now in its seventh season on IFC. I've watched the first four episodes. They are hysterical as always. Also, you guys, if you listen to this podcast, you know I'm a huge fan of Documentary Now, which he co-created. We talk a bit about that and a whole lot more. He is, as you would expect, both hilarious and thoughtful. Fred just turned the big 5-0, if you can believe it. And we talk about his plans for his death and his funeral, which may surprise you or may not. But they are all hysterical and amusing, and thrilled to have Fred on. I never, frankly, sat down with him until he left the studio moments ago, and he was, as advertised, super humble and just a good guy. So thrilled to start a beginning of a hopefully beautiful friendship with Mr. Fred Armisen. As you can hear, I am alone here this week without Sammy. She is out of town, sadly. We'll have her back here next week. But just to update you guys on my own little shenanigans, you can check out on MTV's various social media platforms, etc., and on YouTube, my shenanigans over at the Golden Globes. I assume many of you watched it. If you're like me, you're a pop culture nerd. I got a chance to be on the carpet for the show, which was fun. Talked to Ryan Reynolds and Tom Hiddleston and Diego Luna and Amy Adams, and all those interviews are up on our YouTube page. First time I got a seat in the show, which was insane. How did they let me in? Yes, it was in the back. No, they don't let me near the cool people. But it was still amazing. Honestly, it really was to be in that room when Meryl obviously gave that amazing speech, which was a real moment. And just to see kind of like wander around, saw a lot of familiar folks to the podcast, ran into Hiddleston literally as he was walking off stage after he had accepted his award, gave him a big hug for that, saw Aaron Taylor Johnson right as he came off stage. And obviously he was as shocked, I think, as anybody that he won that award, but so happy for him, as you heard from that podcast, a good guy and a great performance in Nocturnal Animals. So coming off that crazy awards high, back to business here in NYC with a lot of cool podcasts coming up. And in the weeks ahead, I'll also be visiting the Sundance Film Festival, reporting back to you guys with some cool interviews there. So a lot of good stuff ahead in the weeks ahead, but right now in your future is the great Fred Armisen. Check out Portlandia if you don't already. You don't know what good comedy is, and enjoy this conversation with good old Fred. I am very pleased to be joined by the one and only Mr. Fred Armisen.
Hi there. How's it going?
I'm doing very well. Do you go by comedic genius, just genius, comedy legend? What's your proper?
I think doctor.
Doctor? Did you get your PhD?
Yeah, Dr. Little Armisen.
Did your parents want you to be a doctor?
Yeah, my mom kind of did. I guess that's what every parent wants.
The dream of their kid in scrubs and...
It's so weird that that's such a common thing that parents want, because although I know it's lucrative, it's just such a specific specialty that I don't understand why that particularly is like the ideal.
You're saving lives and making good money.
True. True.
It requires a lot of education.
You really answered my question.
Do you have anything else for me? We can turn the tables.
That's pretty
on
good. That's pretty good. I guess it is. There's something utopian about it.
Yes. There you go. Well, neither of us have PhDs yet. I mean, our lives are not. We're half over. Basically.
We're not done.
Yeah.
There's plenty of time for that. Maybe there's a day where it's easier to get a PhD.
I don't know if that's a good. We should be rooting for that, though, Fred. Should we?
Shouldn't we?
Well, I feel. Personally,
I didn't say my reason why.
Okay.
I didn't say that the standards would be lowered. I would say that because if we take enough, I'd say vitamins, maybe our brains will expand in such a way that it will be easier for us too,
right,
to get
of
PhDs.
Minimal knowledge.
That's what
and
I meant.
Intelligence. No, I got it.
I did not want to lower anything.
Do you feel like you're getting smarter? Do you feel like your brain is expanding?
I feel like I get more wisdom, but at the same time, I feel like the more that I learn, the more that I realize I don't know. So I don't know that I'm getting smarter, really.
There's several moments in pop culture and the world going on right now that we should touch on. We escaped the holidays. We all survived the new year. Mm-hmm. You had a birthday recently. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
I hit 40 last year. You just hit 50.
Yeah.
We're both hitting milestones.
Yeah.
Was it a big one for you?
It was great. I celebrated at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery.
Amazing.
And everyone got me a grave.
Oh.
Near Johnny Ramone. So it was a real surprise. I was really happy about it. And
so what's at the grave right now? Is there a tombstone right now? Is it waiting for you?
It's blank, which is really weird because you always figure, like, how is it that they, figure out who's getting the spot?
Yeah.
But somehow they do it.
It's like the same person that, like, figures out who's sitting at what table at the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
Like, they, like, have to – that's a tough decision to figure out.
It must be hard.
Yeah.
But they somehow had this space and they got it for me and – I'm really glad. It's also a favor to everyone else so that everyone knows what my plans are. You know what I mean? So I had a friend die maybe 3 years ago or something, and he was in such a bad state that he had no family or anything. All he had was his friends. We did not know what to do.
Right.
We were just like, we all had to talk to each other, like, what would he have wanted? So all that emergency stuff, now everyone knows.
Now we know which cemetery to go to and where the tombstone's going to be. What's going to read on the tombstone?
Buried Alive, 666. I'm not kidding.
What?
Buried Alive, 666. I want my funeral and my death to be haunting and scary. I think there's too much celebration of death and like, it's too happy.
Right.
And I want it to be a terrifying experience. I want people to go to my funeral and go, like, that was horrifying. And I feel haunted.
Yeah.
I want, because also that song, you know, that, you know,
dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun.
Right.
That is the funeral song. That's what should be played at funerals.
You want that blaring as the coffin is being lowered.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You want a scream from the coffin, like, maybe he is actually in there. Maybe he's still in there.
Even better. Missing body. So I want, because I want to do the sort of hexagonal coffin that looks like a coffin.
Yeah.
And I do, by the way, this is all real.
No, I believe you.
And I want to hire an actor to sort of hunchback to sort of tell everyone, like, the body is missing. I'm so bummed that I'm not going to be there for it. Although
maybe I will. Yeah.
Maybe I will.
That's the upside. Do you think about death often? Has this been something you've thought about? I mean, it's clearly you thought about it recently.
Yeah. I think more about funerals and the traditions that have happened at funerals, but or ceremony. But I don't really think about death because I do believe in that sort of like – we're not going to know when it happens, you know, or we won't be there for it. So it's like it almost doesn't exist.
Why waste your time worrying about it?
About the afterlife or whatever. My hope is that I can haunt at a proper haunted house.
Oh, that'd be sweet.
Yeah, I'm going to find a haunted house, a nice Victorian mansion.
Yeah.
What's going to be your haunting methods? Are you like just the standard like ooh,
kind of
thing? Like
super standard.
Yeah.
Super not hard. Not
don't reinvent the wheel, guys. What I mean, we know it works.
Why? We know like that's you know there are certain things in life that are set. Just do that. You'll make it easier on yourself. So just the sort of cobwebs, candlelight kind of thing. No blood, nothing like that. No like mirrors.
Right.
Just simple, you know, that kind of thing.
Speaking of which, did you watch the Golden Globes?
I did.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Do you enjoy award shows?
I really do.
Yeah?
Because I feel like it's part of the entertainment industry. I am in love with the entertainment industry. I like all of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it. And I like knowing everybody there or a lot of the people there. And like when I was a kid, I remember thinking, I wonder if they all know each other. And then that's what happened. And I thought Jimmy was great.
Yeah,
and
the opening was amazing.
The opening was amazing. And I just really, I loved it.
So when you watched the opening, and as I recall, I was out there covering it for us, and I got to sit through it for the first time, which was amazing to be in that room. As you say, like you kind of go back to like that kid state where it's like, oh, this is showbiz with a capital S. This is like
exactly
right.
That's what I mean. Like you picture yourself as a kid, like going in there and like that's what it looks like.
Yeah.
That's what those cameras look like. That's what those suits look like.
It's so cool. So the first few moments, though, I think his prompter went out.
Yeah.
You must have experienced that at some point. Has that ever happened with you? Like SNL was such a well-oiled machine.
No, but still stuff happens. That's the fun of it is that it's live.
Yeah.
To me, when I watched it happen on the Golden Globes, it felt like it was just a second.
Right.
Like to me, it didn't seem like a long time. I was like – because we don't see the teleprompter not working. We actually see him out there and he's already out on stage and
right.
Doing
if he had
great.
Never mentioned it,
you'd never mentioned it. To me it would have been like, wow, he's just being really loose.
Right.
It was pretty seamless. So it just seemed like it was just a flash of, you know. I think it's kind of exciting.
Yeah. Well, has that – I mean, can you recall a moment where – I mean, do they ever screw up a cue card on SNL? It feels like – because it's old school. It's handwritten cue cards. Like that's what
it's
you guys have,
yeah.
Right?
So that's so that there's less – we're depending on technology less.
Sure.
If there's something very – it's actually a little more reliable.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't recall anything specifically, but just a lot of little things. And that actually falls more to me – where I sort of read something wrong, skipped over a word, and things like that happen all the time.
But part of you, as you were saying, almost enjoys that kind of like
It should feel a little –
like it's happening in the moment and a little
rough. Yeah, a little rough. Because also when I used to watch SNL, I liked it. I liked that sort of seeing it just, you know, once in a while, like a little something happen.
So let's talk about your baby here, Portlandia, entered its seventh season. I'm such a huge fan of this one. You found such a great home at IFC between this show and Documentary Now, which is also like arguably my favorite show on TV.
Oh, you're so nice.
Obsessed. So seven seasons in, this is remarkable. You know how tough that is. I mean, like how insane it is. And for something that, especially at the start, felt like, you know, like all of your stuff in the best possible way, weird and a little off and like not, you know, down the middle, whatever. The fact that you're still going strong and you still have seemingly complete autonomy, I would guess, pretty much.
Yeah. I feel lucky every day.
Yeah.
It's never lost on me. I do not take it for granted. It's insane. Also, you know, I'll see people I know or just I'll read about some show that only went for two seasons or three seasons or whatever. And I can't believe it, you know. And also, good for them. I'm saying I mean it's not easy to keep a show going. It's not, oh, great, you have a show? Wonderful. It's a rare thing, and I can't believe it. I mean, seven, you know, those first five seasons of SNL, it was already such a library of comedy that I can't believe it. It's incredible that I get to do it with Carrie.
Yeah.
It's bananas. I still can't believe it. And Documentary Now, same thing. That was supposed to be what felt like a sort of side project.
Right.
That was like a sort of –
we'll talk about something so – we can talk about that briefly and then get back to Portlandia. But like something so specific and seemingly like such a narrow lane, Documentary Now. But I think it's like its specificity is kind of what makes it genius. Like – and whether you know the documentaries it's referencing or not, I mean, I am a – like I love that stuff. Like this past season, the War Room spoof, The Bunker is just like genius.
We had, thanks, buddy.
We had Mulaney in here and I'm obsessed with both. I could watch Hader do his James Carville like till the end of time, I think.
It is so inspired and God, Bill is – I don't need to explain to you, but Bill is such a special kind of genius, you know. He really gets into doing things. And when he does Carville, it's fantastic.
And you got such acclaim, and justifiably so, for the Juan Likes Rice and Chicken episode, which I mean, again, when I was talking to Mulaney about it, it's like I think they that almost functions as a drama. That's I mean, it's comedic. It's very funny.
Yeah.
But like it's shot so beautifully. It's like you went on location. It's like it almost functions on another level. Do you enjoy kind of going on location for these kind of things? And kind of like it seems like there's decent resources. Like this is like someone's putting in some money or you're making good use of money on IFC.
Yes and no. Like it's not a huge budget and it seems to just – pretty much going to travel.
Right.
We shot in Iceland the season before that. So I think it mostly goes there. And we only do 6 or 7 episodes or something. We saved a little bit where Bill doesn't want to travel.
Does he have anxiety about it or he just doesn't – he has kids and he doesn't want to –
He has a family so there's no – argument about it. He's just like, is there any way we could do it where I don't have to go to Iceland? For me, it's easy, you know. And also, like, I think I like traveling. I think I like going to places for work.
Yeah.
I'm not a very good traveler if it's for leisure. So to have an excuse to go to Colombia, I'll take it.
It seems like in reading about you, you are a guy that, like, does better with a lot on your plate or multiple plates. Like, are you not good with downtime?
No, not at all. I get very nervous. I really like for it to be a jumble of activity. I think I've just worked better that way.
Yeah.
The more projects I have going, the better each project is.
So, and was that part of the rationale for instance, taking on the job over at Seth? Like the, again, that,
same
for,
thing.
It, that seemed like in some ways it was like inspired and amazing. Like, oh my God, he's doing that. And I remember having the same reaction, like also being like, how's he going to do that? Like, I mean, I know I'm sure he still wants to do Andy and these other things. And clearly they're giving you some flexibility, which is great.
Yeah.
But again, part of the rationale is like, oh, I get to be with Seth and be with these guys and have a home and
around musicians. I get to play the drums. Yeah. And then also it keeps me at NBC. So I get to go there. I get to see Lorne.
Right.
I get to see everyone at SNL. It just keeps me in that building and also in New York to an extent too, because Portland is in Portland and Documentary Now is wherever.
This is Happy, Sad, Confused. We'll be right back after this.
With one of the best savings rates in America, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision in the history of decisions. Even easier than choosing Slash to be in your band.
Next up for lead guitar. You're in.
Cool. Yep, even easier than that. And with no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, is it even a decision? That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One N.A. member FDIC.
Can we talk a little bit about the process on Portlandia? I'm just curious from like a production and creative standpoint. Like it seems – I would think like every year this is something you look forward to, kind of like this pocket in time of when you and Carrie can get together and just create crazy, amazing shit.
Yeah.
So how long is the writing process? Do you guys bring ideas for the upcoming season into that writer's room when you kind of get together?
Yeah. There are 5 or 6 of us. Jonathan Kreisel is the director as well, or Carrie directed some episodes too. But Carrie, John, myself, Graham Wagner, Carrie Dornetto, Karen Kilgariff, Megan Neuringer, and we all get together. And it's very traditional. There's like a table, a board, people taking notes, and we just start talking about – we actually look at our phones because all our notes are there. Mm-hmm. And I noticed blank. I noticed this. I noticed that.
Right.
I don't mean blank, but there's no – I'm saying there'll be something written.
I noticed that
people have been wearing this kind of vest this year or whatever. Right. And we just start throwing it all together. And it is – it's fun, but it's work. We definitely – try to figure out how we can turn it into a sketch. Has someone done it already? Is this going to be dated right away?
Right.
Is all that stuff. We start trying to turn it into a story. So and then something crazy will happen where we'll say, well, what do you want for lunch? Well, let's get ramen. Let's get noodles. And then I remember Graham was like, you know what's weird about noodles? All it is like you're trying to figure out a way for it not to whip soup at you. And then right there we were like, why don't we do an episode that's like a noodle monster that just whips soup at people? By the way, that sounds like a story I would have told 1,000 times, but it's not. This is the first time I've told that story.
That's exclusive for Happy Second Piece listeners. Thank you, Fred.
It's that kind of – that happens as well. And I'm sure it happens on every show, but it's a balance of our notes and what's coming. And then sometimes it's just a sound or like an idea or an experience. Every time I go to a hotel, it seems like they over-explain everything.
Right. The amazing sketch with Vanessa that you have in this season that I just loved immediately. Yeah.
Yeah. Carrie directed that one. And that one is just from experience of like, I just
– just get me in my room. Let me go.
I just want to go to the bathroom. That's all I want.
But no, this is how the light switch works. Have you ever had a duvet before? Have you – this is
– 100%. That has happened to me. Especially with light switches and also the temperature and
right. Do I look slow in some way? I mean, am I exuding some kind of issue?
If there's a problem, I will certainly call down, but I think I know how arrows work.
Well, then you need to know how to use the phone.
The phone, it's just endless. I'm already getting annoyed thinking about it.
Sorry.
Same thing with room service too. It's the same thing. Where they're just can I unwrap this, unwrap that.
It's kind of the whole experience, especially if you're, frankly, in a nicer hotel, it's like treating you like a child. Like, you know, like even ordering room service, like, do you want water? Do you need ice in your water? What size of cup do you want?
A stranger you've got to deal with. It's a stranger standing very close to you.
Right.
Holding your hand.
Can I pour it for you?
And I'm like, I'm very much a grown man.
So how does something like – there's also kind of I've been privileged to watch the first 4 episodes and there's a running motif of kind of like the bro culture versus kind of nerds. And like, you know, we've been talking a lot in recent years about like the rise of nerd culture and how it's like – it's a wonderful time to be alive for people like you and me with all due respect. I hope you take that as a compliment.
No, I'm with you on that.
And that – do you have legitimate concerns that this time is coming?
Oh, that's fading.
Come on. Seriously?
I'm so sorry. Hunks, I absolutely have a sense of humor now. They're more vulnerable. They are really in comedy. You just see them paired up with other comedians and paired up well.
Yeah.
They're really delivering and they're, you know, they're built. They've got they really work out and they're funny music fans. There are hunks who are just like, this is the playlist of the cool bands that I like. What we've done is we've put ourselves into such a narrow lane that we're back to being nerds again in a very isolated way because we've made all these rules for ourselves and now we're like left out of the game.
I feel like the embodiment of that, and I love him. It's like you think of like The Rock. The Rock is like the coolest man on the planet.
A perfect example where there was a time where he was limited to his own corner of the room and that is not the case. He could be in any comedy now and not as the joke.
No. It's very upsetting.
When he's on SNL, he's great and it really works and he gets it. I mean, hunks are intelligent. It's okay for hunks to be well-read.
What do we do? What do we do? What happens next? I mean, you're fine. You're okay. I'm still trying to find my niche, my friend.
It's still we. And maybe that's the discussion we have to have is that what do we do and how
do we have to become more of the hunks? Do we have to? I don't want to go more up to the gym now.
Nor do I. But they did it, right? They started reading books. So you tell me. Maybe we do. You know, maybe
the genetics are against us. It's not about like if I went to the gym for 6 hours a day, I'm not going to turn into a hunk.
But they would have said the same thing about reading and doing comedy.
Yeah,
we have to step outside of ourselves. You think I'm happy about this?
This is called tough love.
You know. Maybe we have to bleach our hair. I don't know.
Right.
But it's push-ups time.
What's the nickname that your character has on the show? You get like Scoot? Is that what he goes by?
Yeah. That we came up with that on the day.
Do you have any nicknames?
I don't. Someone pointed out to me that on Wikipedia they gave me a nickname, like nicknames. and one of them was Army. I'm like, I do not have a nickname. I'm called Freddie sometimes, right. But I don't have a nickname. Do you?
No, I don't. I just Josh, not even Joshua.
Yeah.
But I feel like when I think of Freds, traditionally, I don't think – like I don't know. Your image wouldn't come up. I wouldn't think of you as a Fred. Do you feel like your name suits you? Growing up, did you want to be Fred? Did you want a different name?
I picked the name.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, because my father and I were both named Feridun. Mm-hmm. It's a Persian name. And he was named Feridun. I was Feridun Jr. And then everyone called us Fred.
Got it.
In the United States. So he decided, he's like, look, everyone called me Fred. I'm calling myself Fred. Do you want to do the same? And I said, yeah.
Okay.
So we chose the name Fred. I agree. It doesn't quite fit. I should have thought ahead and just kept the name and have been super cool.
Yeah. It's not too late. You can reinvent.
I could. On the other hand, would it be too cool?
Too cool to like?
Like, of course, I've got this like crazy name. It's like better to like balance it out a little
bit. Well, your idol, the artist, Prince, did it a couple times. He kind of kept reinventing and.
Yeah. That was brilliant. I'm going to miss that.
Yeah.
Because that is something I took for granted. I was like, oh, he's being crazy. How awesome was that?
It was genius. It was amazing.
He's like, I am not that person anymore.
I'm a symbol.
I'm a symbol.
I remember when that happened. You obviously remember when that happened.
Oh, yeah.
That was mind-blowing.
Mind-blowing. Also, no one's doing it. I'm like, that is something that has to happen more often.
Yeah, you would think.
A symbol. By the way, a symbol.
I would think, yeah, by now, like, Kanye would be like ampersand or something.
Yeah.
Like, if he was a smart guy by now, come on.
Oh, my God. I'm going to miss that. A symbol.
What symbol would you be if you could change your name to any symbol?
Maybe like that yin-yang with the but crossed out.
Okay.
There's a band called No Means No who used that as their logo, mm-hmm. And I just thought it was so aggressive and funny.
You mentioned that Carrie got to direct a couple episodes. You directed an episode too, I believe, yes?
I did, but she really directed.
What does that mean?
Meaning she is a real visual. I just, I just want to make a show that is where everything works out well. Like, I was just like, I just want to make the episode of Portlandia that is just like the sweetest one.
Right.
Just like pure, just chocolate. But she is actually, she's very visual and she's made to direct. Like it suited her so well because she's very direct. I don't think I'm as direct.
You think it's about what? So,
meaning, so she, yeah. she really, and that's her personality. She just states it and it happens.
Right.
Can you do it more like this? I'm always so worried about what people think.
Right.
I'm like, hey, maybe. I just say maybe. I say, what would you think if, which is really not productive.
Right. And taking every suggestion from an actor. No, sometimes you have to be tough and say, you know
what?
It's
economical to actually be direct.
Right.
You save time.
Okay, so you've worked with all manner of directors in your career,
yeah.
Your illustrious career. Without naming names, what's the worst directing kind of experience? What's the worst kind of director you've worked with? Can you think of a specific
instance?
That's
a really good question. There are directors who are clearly afraid. There are directors who pretend to be indulgent. So they will talk a lot, and I'm like, I think he doesn't know what's happening.
Right.
And who do waste time. I'm like, this. So it's the ones who have let everything run amok that it's just, as far as economics go, is a waste of time.
Yeah. So this is.
And also yelling does not help.
Right. I feel like you're not a yeller.
Oh, not at all. But I've seen that where I'm like, you're making everyone afraid.
Yeah. This is the seventh season. You've already said that the eighth will be the last, yes?
Yeah. I mean, I think so. You know, Carrie and I had this idea that we should definitely have an end point so we have some control over it. I'm also a fan of, like, you never know.
Sure.
Because, I don't know, so many, like, last albums, so many, like, last
farewell
tours.
Yeah, exactly.
And then all of a sudden there they are again. So I'm trying to, like, shy away from it.
Sure.
But the more I talk about it, the more it keeps happening. So eventually I'm sort of shrugging, going, okay, great. It was an idea,
mm-hmm.
But now I think because of contracts and stuff, they have to really sort of
– Nail it down.
Nail it down and go.
So have you started to think about what you're going to fill that kind of whole with once Portlandia is out of your yearly ritual, which is obviously such an important part of your creative and personal life every year.
Oh, I'll do another show for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Well, that's already years ago I was trying to start getting that together, but I, you know, no matter what, I want to be working on another show. So it'll have to be started the beginning again,
sure.
But that's the fun of it.
Can you say anything about what kind of show? What's the dream? What's that? What kind of format is it?
I have two ideas. One is based in the city of Mexico City, and linked to Los Angeles, and the other, which I might mix these two ideas together, is a show where it's all purposefully there are no stakes, all positive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just so tired of going into the writer's room and thinking like, but what's the challenge?
Right.
Let's do something where.
What's the obstacle? What's the journey? How do they change?
Because I'm not good at coming up with those things, I'm like, well, I don't want to anymore.
Yeah. You know?
And by the way, that doesn't really happen on Portlandia. I'm just saying like in general, like this sort of, we've got to make, you know, what's the challenge? Enough.
Yeah.
There's enough of that out there. So those are two things that I want to do.
No, is there a reason in looking at like sort of like the films you've popped up in and TV shows over the years? Like, correct me if I'm wrong. You haven't really been like the guy, the lead in a movie of your own.
Yeah, that's not for me. That's not my role.
I mean, is that an aspiration? I mean, like, you know, I'm sure there could be some level of
if there was a Mike Myers version of it. Sure.
You mean in terms of having some control and steering?
Yeah, the way he's done it, where he plays a character when he's done it.
Yeah.
But film and television have changed so much that I've kind of been, in my own way, able to do what Mike Myers has done on this scale.
Yes.
You know, playing characters and stuff. So, but as far as me being me, I just do not diminish the idea of being on a television show. So
sure.
To me, I'm like, it's almost delusional and
right.
It's sort of, but the reality is that television, I think, is huge. And the amount of people that it reaches everywhere I go, to me, is its own sort of leading character.
Yeah. There's more Happy, Sad, Confused coming up after this break. I know you've talked at length on a number of podcasts, et cetera, about sort of like your career leading up to SNL. And for those, you know, I don't want to rehash everything, but like, you know, obviously had a musical aspirations as a drummer and spent a whole kind of like another life before you even got to SNL.
Yeah.
And but what intrigued me about that is like, again, I think you were about, what, 35 probably?
34 on my – yeah, but then turning 35 on that first year.
Which is interesting because like that's not the usual kind of person that comes to SNL. Like where were you at?
I did the math for it. Like I sort of looked at other cast members to be like, who am I? And Phil Hartman, I think, started at 37 or something. So I just
– And he had a whole other career too. Wasn't he like advertising or whatever?
Yeah,
right?
Graphic design.
Right, right.
So I took that into consideration, but that's just how it unfolded for me and lucky for me.
Yeah.
You know? But I'm sorry, what was your question?
No, I guess it really wasn't a fully formed question except that I find it curious and interesting and I guess you kind of answered in that like it was for the best, you think. Like you were in the right space in terms of where you were.
I can never question it.
Yeah.
I mean, it worked out so well. It is literally – that was and is – those are my dreams coming true. So whatever it took for me to get there, I'll take it.
Did you ever have like
– I mean and also – And it still continues to happen. I think Bobby was maybe 33.
Right, right.
And Leslie.
Leslie, of course, sure. Yeah, yeah.
And Leslie is hugely famous.
Yeah.
No one questions her age. No one goes like, well, but.
But you only started when you were 40, whatever.
Yeah. Whatever. You know, as soon as she hits the screen, people cheer.
Yeah.
And, you know, so.
Did, you know, again, you can't always trust Wikipedia, but according to Wikipedia, I think you like have appeared in 800 plus sketches, like a second only to Keenan over the years. Like you were really like, you know, and I don't need to like enumerate all the different kind of memorable characters, but you were really an amazing kind of utility player that I felt – it feels like everybody felt like they could use you as an asset in virtually any kind of a sketch. Did it feel like from the get-go that you were – you had found a niche and that you were being utilized and you were like, okay, this fits. Because, you know, the stories are famous of like many talented people that were at SNL and just never found their groove and never found the right whatever.
It was the right fit.
Yeah.
It was like I got along with the writers. I loved being in sketches. I didn't care what I did in them. I also didn't mind not being in sketches. I loved being there, watching people be great.
Yeah.
It was all very fortunate. I had a really great time at SNL, super lucky, and those relationships are still thrive today. And yeah, I got to be in all these sketches. It was awesome.
Did you ever have dreams every week when like the guest star would come in that you would emerge out of that week being best friends with the host and go like, oh, I think I'm going to probably click with this. We're probably going to be lifelong friends.
As a matter of fact, I would say yes. Not everybody, but once in a while it would happen. And then sure enough, we would stay in touch.
Really?
I would say Jack Black is one of those people who just also, you know, getting to bump into him at different things. But he was one of those people that I thought, oh, I'd like to get to know this person more. And then did.
Did you ever like use as a basis, I would think most comedians do, like a friend or family member for certain characters? And I guess my question
Yes.
Did you ever piss anybody off when they learned that they were being utilized in that way?
No. That never happened.
They all took it as a compliment and
yes.
In the spirit it was intended.
Yeah. My grandmother used to say, ay, Dios mío, for the first
right.
character I did.
Did you have a favorite obscure impression that you did or obscure character? Because I always like kind of the more specific, bizarre ones. I mean, it's fun to do like an Obama, but it's – in some ways, it's more rewarding and exciting to kind of do the
yeah. There's a
the
couple.
Fringe.
I would say the couple weird ones was for some reason I enjoyed. It was one sketch. I don't know if anyone ever saw it, but for one sketch, I got to be David Lee Roth.
Okay.
And I enjoyed that. Gene Simmons, I was a couple of times, and I just really enjoyed that. So. And then Robert Durst, but that then turned out to be something for Kimmy Schmidt and stuff.
Yeah.
But at the time, he wasn't as famous as he is now.
Do you have dramatic aspirations?
I mean, no.
Really?
I just want to do, like, my lot in life is to do comedy and to do this. I'm good.
But I'm surprised, like.
I mean, that said.
If, like, Martin Scorsese or P.T. Anderson say, like, oh, you'd be fun for a couple scenes in Inherent Vice 2.
Right, but they would have hired me because they wanted some sort of comedic angle. So Martin Short in Inherent Vice is like, yes, it's a drama, but you could feel Martin Short. I think of Martin Short as an example of a way I'd like my career to go.
In that he can do it all. He can do Broadway. He can.
Yes, and he personally is happy with what he does. So he doesn't have a chip on his shoulder. He's like, this is what I do. I love it.
And it's infectious when you see him on like a talk show or
you
something.
You can feel it.
He's
enjoying it.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't take it so seriously that is he doesn't seem to be needy. He just loves doing it.
Do you think that's kind of like the old myth of like the tortured kind of comedian is indeed that? Or are you the exception to the rule?
I've seen examples of both. I know other people also who are like having a great time.
Yeah.
I think Steve Martin really enjoys his life and – so there are examples of both. And also, there's no right or wrong. It's just people appreciate it or they don't.
So growing up, I know like it seems like music was your first love, right, growing up? That was yes or no?
Yes, but also, I mean, I always loved comedy. I always watched Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
I always loved comedians. I always loved Andy Kaufman and SCTV and Kids in the Hall. So it was always mixed up for me. And I also loved Devo and David Byrne, who used comedy in their own way. So it was always a mix.
What about film? Were you a big film guy growing up?
Not that much, a little. But, you know, I liked like the Terry Gilliam movies and stuff like that. But I'm not one of those people who was like, movies changed my life.
Got it.
Television changed my life. But I love movies like everybody. But
sure.
I am not one of the – I am not – I don't have like a long – I don't have like a lecture on what was
– Right.
You know.
So what you could talk at length about
in fact,
Monty Python.
In fact, I think all films are very poorly made.
Oh.
They're all very poorly
made. There's our poll quote.
There's your pull quote.
There's our breaking news.
The lighting is off.
Fred, that's a very kind of broad statement.
Watch all movies again.
All movies.
Watch them and you'll see what I mean. The lighting is off.
That doesn't make any sense because you're saying you're
In every scene, but the lighting is off in some scenes. A little, you'll see.
I'm not even sure what I'm looking for. I'm just
look for the lighting of backdrops.
Okay.
Some of car lighting when they do the
oh, sure.
When they're driving by, it doesn't match the like speed of what the car should be going.
Yeah, and that takes you out of it, huh?
Immediately.
Yeah.
I have walked out of 100 movies. As soon as I see the speed not match, I'm like, look, if you're not going to match that up, I don't need to be here.
Huh. That's not very pleasant for you.
Sound editing is sometimes off. You know you've seen it.
No, I'm not noticing.
You know you've – look again.
Or listen for it.
Also, when extras are talking, you don't hear them. I'm like, I want to be hearing every extra. Why are they talking if I don't hear them?
Do you encourage your extras to be vocal in Portlandia?
Always.
Drown me out if you
drown
can.
Drown me out.
So what can we look forward to in the next – Pat, there are probably 6 more episodes that I haven't seen in Portlandia this season. Some regulars returning, some new folks. Like how do you get your – do your guest stars, are they mostly folks that you know or do
– Yeah, although – it's become blurry. We're like, there are people I text and I say, come up to Portland. And there are some that are just through agents, like the regular channels of, can you get so-and-so? And then it happens.
What was the biggest kind of leap of faith? Like, just like, could we get them? And then bizarrely, they came through.
I'd say Claire Danes.
She's great in her
episode. Yeah, that was a very like, we were like, she's got to be busy. Because you have to fly up to Portland, which is not, you know.
Yeah. And they don't shoot Homeland in a week.
No. That's an intense show. So that was a little bit of like, oh, this is happening. Laurie Metcalf, I found also, was like, that was through agents and stuff. And that was another one. I think she had just been nominated for a bunch of Emmys. I was like, this is not going to happen.
She's so good. She's always,
she was right there.
So is, whose idea was Kyle in the first place, Kyle MacLachlan?
That was Jonathan, our director.
Yeah.
Who said, we need someone like Kyle MacLachlan. We were sitting in the office. This is for our pilot. I'm like, we need like someone like Kyle MacLachlan. And then we were just like, we're in Los Angeles. Don't we make a phone call that says, can you find? And he showed up. He turned up, came in for a meeting or whatever, and there it was. And he's – God, he's great.
Yeah. Has he given you any hints about Twin Peaks? Do you have any dirt on the new season?
No. But I don't think there's any like – dirt anyway.
I guess there's not. It's not like I'm looking for plot. I just want to bathe in 18 hours of David Lynch. Like,
right.
You know?
I think all of that is a little bit like I think all of that is like pretty open.
Yeah.
Really. I think because Kyle's very open. He's very sort of – he likes talking about it. He's not like, I'm not going to say anything.
Sure.
I auditioned for it.
Did you really?
Yeah. I did not get it.
What?
But it was a great audition because all it was they said – They asked me, what do you dream about?
Of course they did. That's so great.
That's what I want a Twin Peaks audition to be like. I'm like,
you got what you needed.
Absolutely. It was great.
Was there a dwarf in the room?
No. Maybe behind a curtain. I've been rewatching Twin Peaks.
Yeah. It's been a while for me, but it's genius. The first season in particular.
Yeah. It's really great. It's shocking that it got made.
Yeah, and apparently it was on ABC, it was on a major network and like –
it would never happen.
It's crazy.
Even the opening credits, it's like this green light for the title is just
– And that score, Angelo, I can't pronounce his last name, Baldomenti or something, amazing, right?
Incredible.
So do you – was David there for the audition?
No. There was someone – but it was –
still worthwhile.
Great, great, great experience.
What did you answer when they asked? So now we know the wrong answer, unfortunately.
My real answer was that I don't dream. I don't know what it is if I don't remember or something like that. But I was just trying to be honest without being like, well, actually, I was like, let me just – I don't remember my dreams.
And you just like walked out of the room?
I said, none of your business.
Slammed the door.
I was like, none of your business.
If David wants me, he knows where to find me.
I should have said something really phony like, getting this job. Really? I think about getting this job. Oh, that'd be so lame.
Do you still go out for auditions if it's like a project like that, like where it's where like
once in a while? Yeah. If it's exactly like if it's a project like that. Other than that, no.
Feels like you're busy enough. You don't need.
I'm busy enough. Or when someone wants me to do something, they email me. It's like an email, and it always seems like the right kind of project, and then it just happens.
There you go.
Yeah.
And what's the schedule for documentary now? Have you guys started work on the next season?
No, I think we're gonna rest for a minute.
Take a breather.
Take a breather for a year or something. We'll see what happens after that. But we wanted it to feel not like a job.
Yeah.
Like, let's just make these special, take our time.
Well, they definitely feel
and
that.
And Bill's got a show going on at HBO this year, so he's going to do that.
Right, and Mr. Mulaney's doing a great show on Broadway. Oh, hello, yeah. Very funny.
Yeah.
Broadway ambitions for you? What do you want to do?
Never.
Really?
No.
I admire that you know what you don't want to do as much as you know what you want to do.
Yeah. I mean,
like, kind of, you know,
because first of all, that they did it right. I like their show. I just don't know the world of Broadway enough to know how to get there. There are enough great Broadway shows.
Gotcha. Well, keep making great television.
Thank you.
And doing what you do. I'm such a fan, as I said. Portlandia, now in its seventh season on IFC, going strong. Everybody should check it out. You know it. You love it. And I can't wait to see what's in store the rest of the season and Documentary Now and at Seth. And as I said, I'm a great admirer, and I really appreciate you coming by today, man.
Thank you. And I want to say to all the listeners out there, please listen to this podcast. Please, listen.
Fred.
If you're tuning in, don't change that dial, I guess.
It doesn't even matter. I mean, that's besides the point, because they're now at the end of the podcast. So why would they be listening to the last minute?
Because it's not the end of the podcast. Keep listening.
No.
There's going to be silence for half an hour. And way at the end, we've got a couple surprises. See you there.
Okay. Let's talk off mic about this. But thanks for listening.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.
This episode of Happy, Sad, Confused was produced by Michael Catano, James T. Green, Mukta Mohan, and Kasia Mihailovich for the MTV Podcast Network, with additional engineering by Little Everywhere. You can subscribe to this and all of our other shows on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you find your favorite podcasts.
With one of the best savings rates in America, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision in the history of decisions. Even easier than choosing Slash to be in your band.
Next up for lead guitar. You're in.
Cool. Yep, even easier than that. And with no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, is it even a decision? That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One N.A. member FDIC.